The rest of the meal passed in relative silence. The roast fowl had been followed by a salad of fresh diced vegetables in an iced sauce strongly flavored with parsley, Cecilia's favorite eccentricity, and one which never failed to startle guests. It awoke, she contended, the sleepy palates which the roast had soothed and satisfied. Crisp rounds of a distant descendant of potato followed, each centered with a rosette of pureed prawns. The trick, which no one but her own cook seemed to manage, was to have the slices of potato boiled slightly before roasting, so that the outer surfaces were almost crunchy, but the inside mealy. The young people, she noted, took additional servings of potato, as they had of the roast fowl. Finally, Bates brought in tiny flaky pastries stuffed with finely diced fruit in chocolate and cinnamon sauce. One each, although Cecilia knew that a few would be waiting for her later, safely hidden from the young people. Satiety slowed them down, she noticed, nibbling her own pastry with deliberate care. They looked as if they wanted to throw themselves back in deep chairs and lounge. Not in my dining room, she thought, and smiled. The elegant but uncomfortable chairs that Berenice's designer had foisted on her had their purpose after all. Cecilia neither knew nor cared about the current social fashions of the young. In her young days, the great families had revived, or continued, the custom of a separate withdrawal of each sex with itself for a time after dinner, the women moving to one room and the men to another. She had resented it, and in her own yacht ignored it. Either she invited guests, all of them, to continue their discussion in the lounge, or she excused herself and let them do what they would. Tonight, with a good meal behind her, she felt mellow enough to grant them more of her time. Perhaps well-fed, with hangovers behind them, they would be amusing. At least she might hear some interesting gossip, since none of them seemed to have the slightest reticence. She got to her feet.
"Let's move to the lounge."
The young people stood as they ought, but Ronnie frowned.
"If it's all the same to you, Aunt Ceci, I'd rather watch a show. We brought our own cubes."
The dark girl, Raffaella, opened her mouth as if to protest, but then shut it.
"Very well."
Snub her, would they? On her own yacht? She would not stoop to equal their discourtesy, but she would not forget it either.
"Wait, Ronnie, we really should..."
"Never mind. I'm sure you're quite right. You would only be bored talking with an old lady."
Cecilia turned on her heel and stalked out, leaving them to find their own way. At least she didn't have to spend more time in that disgusting lavender and teal lounge the designer had left her. She toyed with the idea of having the yacht redone and charging it to her sister, but the quick humor that always followed her quick temper reminded her how ridiculous that would be. Like the time she and Berenice had quarreled, only to discover that her brothers had taped the row for the amusement of an entire gang of little boys. She shook her head. This time she was justified in her anger. She wasn't ready to laugh. Mertis, recognizing storm signals, stood ready to remove her jewels. Cecilia smiled at her in the mirror as the deft fingers unhooked the necklace.
"The young people prefer to watch entertainment cubes. I'll be reading late, I expect."
What she really wanted to do was hook up the system and take a long, strenuous ride. But that would mean another swim to cool off, and she suspected the young people would keep late hours. When Mertis handed her the brocade robe, she slipped it on and went back to her study. Here, with the door closed and the evening lights on in the solarium, she could lie back in her favorite chair and watch the nightlife. Two fan lizards twined around a fern frond, their erectile fans quivering and shimmering with delicate colors. At the sculpted water fountain, two fine-boned miniature horses dipped their heads to drink. They were not, of course, real horses. Other small species had gone into their bioengineering specs. But in the dusky light, they looked real, or magical, depending on her mood. Something flickered along the shadowy floor of the tiny forest, and a seer owl swooped. Then it stood, talons clubbed on its prey, and stared at her with silvery eyes. Not really at her, of course. It saw the window's far-side illusion, a net of silvery strands that even an owl would not dare. The little horses had thrown up their heads, muzzles dripping. When the action began, they had shied, but returned to the water as the owl began to feed. Cass and Vicka, Celia thought. her favorite of the little mares, and her yearling. In daytime lighting, the mare was honey gold dappled with brown on top, with a white belly and striped mane of dark and cream. It was as close as Cecilia had ever found in the miniatures to her performance horse. Most breeders of the tiny animals liked the exotic colors the non-equine species introduced. When the mare led the young one back into the undergrowth, Cecilia blanked the window. Now she had the view that in all her memory made her happiest, her study at Orchard Hall, with the window overlooking the stable yard. Across the yard, the open top doors of a dozen stalls and the horses looking out eagerly for morning feed. If she wanted, she could set the view into motion in a long loop that covered the entire day's activities. She could include sounds and even the smell, although Mertis would sniff afterwards and spray everything with mint. But she could not walk out the door over there, the one with the comfortable old-fashioned handle, and step into her former life. She shrugged, angry at herself for indulging even this much self-pity, and called up a new view, a seascape out a lighthouse window. She added the audible and olfactory inputs and made herself breathe deeply of the salt tang in the air. She had told Mertis she would read late. She would read. And not a cube, but a real book, which enforced concentration far better. She allowed herself the indulgence of choosing an old favorite, The Family of Dialan Saloon, a wickly witty attack on the pomposity of noble families four generations past. Her sweet young breast roused against the foe, Marilisa noted that it had not hands nor tentacles with which to wield the appropriate weaponry. Knowing it was coming, it still made her laugh. By the end of the first chapter, she had finally quit grumbling inside about Ronnie and his friends. She could always hide out in her cabin reading. They would think she was sulking miserably and never know that her sides ached from laughing. Harris had had no idea a yacht could be this complicated. It was so small, after all, with so few people aboard. But rich civilians did nothing efficiently. As she worked her way through the manuals, the schematics, the overlays, she wished she'd had weeks aboard before the first voyage. Hours were not enough. She wrinkled her nose at the desk screen, muttering. The owner's quarters separate from the household staff's quarters, and both separate from crew quarters. Four complete and separate hydroponic systems, crew support, household support, food, and flowers.
Flowers?
She pushed that aside to consider later. Ship's crew, her people, were responsible for all life support, but not for the household food and flowers. Ship's crew maintained all the physical plant, the wiring, the comm connections. In one of the few duties that did overlap, the household kitchen supplied the crew. Not Madame's own cook, of course, but her assistants. Eventually, she went in search of further enlightenment and chose the most senior employee aboard, Bates. She had stayed out of his path, which seemed to be what he expected, but no captain could command without knowledge.
The Serrano Legacy Hunting Party is continued on the next CD.